Before we begin with our one public hearing this evening, I'd like to welcome Mr. Mark Cote from the Delaware Department of Transportation. He is here with us this evening as a resource for both the commission and to answer questions and be available to us for issues that relate to DelDOT. We really do appreciate your being here and appreciate the department's reaching out and in cooperation to the commission. Our public hearing this evening is Subdivision 2014-2 Schofield LLC.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, dividing 132.08 acres into 166 lots, located northwesterly side of Route 267, adjacent to Breakwater RPC, and being identified on as tax map ID District 335, map 8, parcels 46, 51, and 53.02. And I would ask, Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Abbott has any additional comments based on the Technical Advisory Committee review. And I will note in an exhibit on July 14th of 2014, the applicant did provide a rather large exhibit booklet for consideration by the commission.
The Technical Advisory Committee report is a part of the record for this application. It was also copied in the exhibit booklet that you received. We received a letter from Hazel Smith and Karen Parker in support of this application, and we received an email addressed to Mr. Lank, and they expressed concerns about the entrance location, the bike path location, and all the construction on Gills Neck Road. They'll both be made a part of the record, and I'll pass those down for your review. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. Okay, is there anyone here representing this application? Ladies and gentlemen, it appears that our applicant does have some exhibits with him this evening, judging by that huge satchel he's carrying there. And he will be displaying them on the easels on either side, but they're very difficult for you to see from where you're sitting. So feel free to get up and come take a closer look. I just ask that you don't have any conversation while you're there, because we are going to proceed with the hearing and let them get on with their presentation. But at any time during the meeting, feel free to get up and take a closer look. Thank you. Mr. Byard.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. Good evening, gentlemen. Gene Byard on behalf of the applicant, Schofield LLC. With me tonight to present the application are Doug Motley and Nick Hammonds from Jack Lingo Asset Management, the project manager; Doug Warner from Element, the project designer and engineer; and a member of Schofield LLC, Bill Lingo, somewhere in the audience. I'd like to begin, since there are a number of people with an interest in this application, with Doug Motley, if he could come forward. Doug, if you could identify yourself briefly.
Sure. Doug Motley, Jack Lingo Asset Management, 246 Rehoboth Avenue, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware.
Can you give the commission a brief history of the Schofield property itself?
Yes. This project is proposed on 133 acres, which is located on Gills Neck Road. The subject property was owned for more than 50 years by the Smith family, notably Mr. Otis Smith, who was the mayor of the city of Lewis for 18 years, as well as Mrs. Smith, neither elected to annex the property into the city during the time that they owned it. Over the course of 2005 to 2008, Schofield LLC acquired an assemblage of parcels from the Smith family. And this assemblage totaled about 230 acres, with 139 plus or minus located in the county and 91 located within the city. Once these properties were assembled, an original plan was developed that included 607 units. And that contemplated the annexation of the portion of the 130 or so acres in the county into the city. That original plan is included in Tab C of your project booklet for reference, and we do have a board of that as well. During that process, the developer participated in more than 50 public meetings over a three-year period as part of the city's review and approval process. Details of those meetings are also in tab C of your project booklet. And as you know, during that time frame, the financial crisis occurred. With that, the national and local real estate markets had a tremendous shock, and this drove the owners to reconsider and pause any further pursuit of annexation or approvals for the project at that time. Beginning in 2012, the developer, we reevaluated the market conditions and ultimately redesigned a portion of the project, which is what's before you today, to provide 166 single-family detached homes. We restarted discussions with the City of Lewis and officials thereof with a series of meetings in 2013. However, after months of discussions, that ended virtually with no progress and the realization that the timelines associated with the city's processes simply didn't work given the business or the owner's business deadlines. In addition, the revised plan, as you'll see, we believe is tailored perfectly for the county's cluster ordinance and environmentally sensitive district.
Doug, if you could refresh our recollection, how large was the combined 230-acre development?
607 units.
And with respect to the 91 acres that is still within the corporate limits of Lewis, how's that property zoned?
So that's currently zoned R2, and under the city code, R2 allows for a minimum of 10,000 square foot lots. After allowing for roads and things like that, that's about 3.5 units an acre, which totals about 318 units total.
Does Schofield LLC have any present plans for the development of that property?
No, not at this time. No designs have been finalized or applications have been submitted.
Could you go to the board and take the commission on a quick tour of the Gills Neck area?
Sure.
So for orientation, downtown City of Lewis, Route 1, Kings Highway turning into Freeman Highway, Cape Henlopen High School, and this is the application in front of you today. Across the street and also on this side of the piece here is the Smith Family Farm, which totals about 50 acres. Following along Gills Neck Road, you have Wolf Point, which is about 188 units, single family, larger lot, single family custom home. And Wolf Point, which is 82 units, similar in nature. Both of those projects are fully built out at this point. Next to that is Hawkseye, which has 7 lots remaining. Again, another larger lot, larger custom home subdivision. Continuing on, same side of the road, you have Senators, which is under construction at this time. It's been a tremendous success so far. In the first year and a half or so, they've sold 130 homes have been sold in that community. Which has been a great driver for both economic activity and jobs in this market. Continuing across the street, you have Breakwater, which on the eastern side of the border with Schofield has single-family homes and twin and townhomes on the western or southern portion of the property. That is close to being sold out, and that totals 185 units. And then Cadbury is at the Bend, which is the assisted living community, and I believe they have an application submitted for an expansion of their facility as well because they're fully occupied.
Would it be fair to call this subdivision an infill in this location?
Yes, I think that would be fair, and it is an investment level one.
I asked Doug Warner to come up and identify himself. And we'll get to the nuts and bolts of this application. Doug, if you would.
Yeah, Douglas M. Warner, professional engineer, Element Design Group.
Doug, could you briefly describe the site and its present condition?
Yeah, I'm going to change the slide. This is the developed plan, however. 132 acres. We have about 33 acres of primary trees. We'll see that here on the western portion, and then in the portion where the proposed entrance is across from Wolf Point. In the upper section here on the north side, it's adjacent to White's Pond. There's approximately 1.59, 1.6 acres of wetlands on this particular site here. Topography, there's a couple existing barns that we're trying to maintain on the site. It's kind of somewhat of a high point in terms of the topo, a lot of water. Running in this direction over to the pond, subsequently in a drainage ditch to the canal. A lot of the water on this side is coming in this direction and kind of infiltrating and doing a little bit of stuff on its own.
Are soils on the property suitable for subdivision?
Yes. There's been several soil borings, and it's part of your booklet, taken throughout this whole section here, much of which shows good signs for infiltration, actually.
Are there any unmanageable stormwater issues on the site?
No, not whatsoever, really. We're going to use a combination of infiltration, as you'll see here, also some wet ponds for some level of quantity control. With this being tidally influenced, we have had discussions with the Conservation District in Denrick for quantity waivers because of the tidal influence there, which gives us a lot of flexibility in the types of BMPs, you know, filter strips and so forth, that we can also get in combination with the ponds.
Are there any hydrology or groundwater recharge issues with the site?
Well, the site is located in a good to high recharge zone. And there's a study in the book there also indicates that it's not within the cone of influence of the Lewis well field. The study has indicated that some of the best management practices that we'll actually be doing here with the filtration and the filtration strips and the infiltration, we won't harm that recharge at all and may actually enhance it.
And the source of water and sewer for the project?
Water is to be provided by Lewis Board of Public Works, and the sewer is currently going to be proposed by Sussex County.
Did you make a trip to PLUS? Did you make a trip to PLUS?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been the PLUS under numerous stages. Typical comments, I would say, from PLUS, you know, or DelDOT, all the reviewing agencies. I don't think anything out of the norm or that we're not attempting to address in this application.
What about the Technical Advisory Committee?
Same type of thing. We've gotten comments from Fire Marshal, Denrec, and all the subsequent agencies. I would say, not necessarily boilerplate, but some of the same comments, a lot of which will be addressed as the design further evolves.
Let's get to the question of design itself. This is your baby, Doug. Can you talk the commission through the design of the project?
Yeah, our primary focus here was to capture some of the main key areas that we wanted to maintain on the site. This group of forested area here on the northwestern section, the high spot where an existing barn, pretty beautiful barn, has been started to be rehab on it already, and also maintain another quasi-barn lean-to over here on the south section of it. And our design focus is to maintain those areas and actually get some interconnectivity from one side of the site to the other side of the site. We'll have some walking trails and so forth from one barn to the next amenity here, and also into this wooded area. That was kind of our main focus of the design. Two entrances, one directly across from Wolf Point. This is a boulevarded entrance, and one adjacent to Breakwater, where the proposed Breakwater Junction Trail will also be going down around that side.
Are those entrance locations established by you, or have they been established in consultation with DelDOT?
Well, certainly in consultation with DelDOT, yes, absolutely. The road network that we have in here, as I say, we have a boulevard kind of coming in, leading you to the end result of White's Pond, a little stop off at a really great amenity. A little bit more curvilinear approach on this side, slows down a little bit of traffic. We have some potential, the 50-foot right-of-way, curb and gutter, sidewalk on one side is what we're proposing here. Interconnectivity plan between lots 39 and 40, leading over to the Lewis parcel here. And then again, at this cul-de-sac that we have here with the anticipation, or if there's any kind of interconnectivity happening there.
Back to the right-of-way, I guess it would be west of White's Pond. What does that serve, Doug?
This here?
Yes.
Yeah, we've allocated 50-foot width of right-of-way for future connectivity if something was to be developed in this particular area.
My eyes aren't that good. Does that empty onto Monroe Avenue extended?
Yeah, this is Monroe Avenue extended. Freeman Highway would be right up here. So it's literally right about where my hand is, where Freeman would be.
How much open space is created by this design?
We have 44 acres of open space, approximately 33% of the site. And again, much of that open space, you know, stormwater ponds and so forth are in there, but we really tried to get a little bit of a cluster to temp at that. And you'll see that, and again, in this kind of repetitive statement that is here with the tree forest, open space in the center, and then again, some open space on the westerly side.
Can you talk about the buffers that are created?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole site is surrounded by a 20-foot wooded buffer that we'll have. We own the wetlands. We have a 50-foot proposed wetland buffer up in this northwest section, And then we have a 50-foot ag buffer, as we call it, for on this property adjacent to agricultural land.
Let's move on to the cluster subdivision itself. Can you speak to your design?
Yeah, again, I mean, would you like me to run through the specific
yes.
items in there? Yeah. There's a couple sections on the requirements of the cluster subdivision, 115.25E, and I'll just kind of paraphrase some of these items for you. Again, the main number, topic number one is, the gist of this is to try and get some reduced size lots compared to the 20,000 that we would find in a non-cluster. Minimum lot size here is a little over 13,000 square feet. Again, we're trying to emphasize big portions of open space and clustering this, keeping the environmentally sensitive type of areas intact and developing the farmland. Item number two, single family housing, obviously what we're proposing. Items three and four deal with the buffers. We just talked about the ag buffers, wetland buffers, and forested buffers. All lots, internal access from streets, nothing from Gills Neck or any other highway. No lots in the wetlands. And again, water and sewer from Lewis and the county.
Did you prepare a yield plan as the ordinance requires?
I certainly did.
I don't know if I made a board of it, but it is in, here it is.
I don't really like to show it, to be honest with you. This is a yield plan that we developed to demonstrate a non-cluster subdivision and how that could potentially be designed into the site. Very gridded type of system, minimum lot, 20,000 square feet. We've developed, I believe, 186 lots in here. No maintaining of the barns, utilization of some of the forest area, obviously still meeting the code requirements in this feasibility study, but not nearly coming up with a plan as inviting or marketable as we certainly have with the actual plan.
So to get the numbers straight, the subdivision that you designed is 166 lots?
The proposed subdivision is 166. The yield plan demonstrates its requirements for non-cluster of 186.
So with the design you've created, there are 20 less lots than the yield plan.
That is correct.
But let's talk about compliance with the county's environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone.
Sure. Again, several key parameters identified here. One, item A deals with stormwater and compliance with all the local regs. Honestly, that's the regulations have continued to get better and better with TMDLs and soil and erosion control, and it's become standard operating procedure for us to meet those particular guidelines. Water, again, from Lewis. With the potential to look into private wells for irrigation. Item C is the sewer coming from the county. We discussed that. D, traffic. Doug will talk about that in just a little bit. We've identified no endangered and threatened species on this site. No wetland impacts. Open space pertains to item G, and we've discussed that, I believe. Again, 44 acres, 33% of the site. H, again, a little redundant, I apologize. Again, it's sewer and water public works in the county. I, economics, Doug will talk a little bit about that. J, no historic or cultural type of things have been identified on the site as well, so no impact there. And K talks about, is this in compliance with the comp plan? It's level one. We're complying with using the guidelines of the Sensitive Development District, and we're developing in the ag area. I think it's very much in compliance. And it's a repetition of what I just said. It's the primary intent is low impact of our design. I got to take this one down. There we go. Primary intent is low impact, keeping the natural features in place and keeping the scenery very nice. Just as a point out, one of our design intents was along Gills Neck is to maintain the look that Gills Neck has at this current time. All the development is set back, and as you'll see, a lot of that really cool split rail fence and things of that nature are going to be maintained along the site from externally. Internally, we're going to capture some of those same things. All maintenance of the barns, good views down the White's Pond. No lots are backing up to one another, except for a few in here, which we think are actually pretty cool around the clubhouse and in this little pocket neighborhood, if you will, here.
So is it fair to say that even though you're the designer, you would call this a superior design to the yield plan?
I would, absolutely.
Let's move on to 99-9C, the gospel of subdivisions in Sussex County, if you could go through that.
Sure.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to hand up to members of the commission, just as a matter of information, a copy of Lewis's subdivision ordinance requirement. It's 170-19E, and you'll see some remarkable similarities. In fact, truth be told, the city ordinance copied the 17 specific requirements of 99-C in their ordinance. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I'm not going to read verbatim, however. Number one is talks about integrating the existing landscape and terrain and maintaining views. And I kind of just went over that again. Real big goal in trying to maintain Gill's Neck as it is and keeping the on-site features as they are. Number two, no impact to wetlands. We do have a small section of the site that is in the AE9 zone. So there are a handful of lots here that will have to comply with FEMA and local regulations for that. However, that's just kind of concentrated right here on this one side of the cul-de-sac. Natural and historic preservation, I think we're certainly meeting that in terms of the barns and as well as the tree stands. Four, we talked about the open space and large clusters of open space. We certainly feel as part of this plan. Item number five, tree removal. The two major clusters of the 33 acres that we're talking about, one is completely being maintained. There are some sporadic trees over in this area a little bit. This section here, our intent is to try and, obviously we have to clear for the infrastructure and then to encourage in the architectural guidelines and so forth, maintenance of trees or maintaining the trees on the individual lots. But this will basically, these tree stands will be cleared minimal for the right-of-way going through there. Number six, maintaining good screening with buffers and internal designs. I think I've touched on that. Seven and eight, again, water supply from Lewis, sewer from the city or from the county. Number nine deals with pollution controls and best water and stormwater best management practices. Again, with what's in place for us in terms of how we got to design things, I think it's certainly going to be an improvement and we'll be meeting all of those types of guidelines. Number 10 deals with the same thing, stormwater management, flooding, you know, pre-development, post-development. You know, we're not going to be putting any more water either into the White's Pond over to the canal than is currently going there. We're held to post-development being less than pre-development. Safe vehicular travel. We have a network, as I indicated, all the roads will have sidewalk on one side, and we also have a trail system going through from amenities to the open area. And then we do have some, what we try to do is get some little bit of curviness in here to get some natural slowing down of the vehicles, particularly on the inside portions here. Property value, I think Doug will talk a little bit about that. Again, our focus was to develop this on the farmland. You know, sometimes in the code it says preservation of farmland, but yet they want you to not mess with the trees and the other items. So what we've done here is we've kept all the environmentally sensitive areas intact and develop the resulting agricultural land in this level one area. 14, 15, 16 schools, transportation, compatibility with neighbors. I think Doug will touch on that a little bit. And then lastly, kind of redundant again, stormwater practices. And I think we all have high standards set from DENREC and the conservation district that will be needed.
Thanks, Doug. Doug the first, if you would come back to the podium. One question I forgot to ask you earlier, Doug, was the difference in numbers of units in the what was planned to be annexed into the city on this 132 acres as opposed to what there is now. What's the spread?
So the total project was, as I said, 607 units. Some of those units kind of overlaid the property line, but it's at least 350 units would be have sat physically on this piece of land. So we're looking at 350 versus 166. And there's a difference of product type, obviously, that goes along with that of multifamily attached to single family detached.
Let's move on to some details about the project. Can you talk about the amenities that are planned for the project?
Sure. As Doug mentioned, there are two barns, one on the western side, one on the eastern side. The one on the eastern side sits atop a hill and has great views looking out towards the state park and canal, et cetera. And that barn has already been partially restored. Our plan with that would be to fully restore it inside and out, continuing with the architectural shingle kind of history of it, make that the community clubhouse, have the pool right nearby there, and have a really neat kind of amenity area there. The other barn is not in as good a condition, but we would restore that and make that an aesthetic addition to the stormwater pond. So as you came in that main entrance road, you would see the pond and the restored barn there, really creating a great feature.
Let's talk about the bike path. There is an area set aside on the west side of the property. Can you talk about that, a little bit about the history of the bike path?
Sure. As you may recall, the first section of the Junction Breakwater Trail originated in Canal Corcoran on the Rehoboth side. That continued through the parkland off Holland Glade Road, and then along the in conjunction with the Wolf Neck County Sewer System development, along that railroad bed through Hawk's Eye, originally putting out on Gills Neck Road with the development of Senators. It was continued through Hawk's Eye, through Senators, and now comes out at the corner of Gills Neck Road and continues out towards the high school. With this project, an easement has already been granted to DelDOT. I'm going to go to the board for a second.
An easement has been granted to DelDOT, gifted to them along this area of the property line here. The trail, the intention is the trail comes out from called the Senator's Corner at Gills Neck, roughly around here. We continue on in front of Senator's and Hawk's Eye and then cross the road here. And this has been part of our discussions with DelDOT in terms of making sure that this entrance is coordinated and orchestrated so that it's very pedestrian friendly because of the volume of people that use, you know, the great amenity for the whole community. So the trail will continue along between Breakwater and Schofield, hop onto the Schofield property here, up to Freeman Highway, and then continuing up to Freeman Highway, and then would run east towards the canal. DelDOT has actually started. There's message boards out there now, and I think that their construction's imminent for the actual starting of the work on this end and working back this way.
One thing we haven't talked about yet is what DelDOT is required of this project and what construction is expected and what's ongoing presently. And Mark Cote is here to weigh in if he chooses.
Sure. So just by way of history, a TIS was done in 2007, and that review was finalized in early 2008, and that contemplated the full 607-unit project. As part of our redesign process, we sat down and collaborated with DelDOT and said, hey, we've got all this ton of money spent on both sides, a lot of analysis, a lot of hard work. How do we use this given the massive change in density? And basically where we landed through a series of meetings, ultimately in October of 2013, where the site and the off-site requirements were generally agreed upon. We still have to design them and do that process in the final engineering. But in theory and concept, we all kind of nodded our heads. And the two components of that from a project-related standpoint are at the southern entrance
here. There is a
shared left and through lane, and a bypass lane would be required there. We're looking at two options, one of a roundabout. They tend not to be all that pedestrian friendly versus just a normal traditional entrance. Again, really focusing on the safety of pedestrians at that juncture with the Breakwater Trail there. So that's definitely top of mind with both DelDOT and us. The second would be along our frontage of Gills Neck Road, improving that with 11-foot travel lanes and 5-foot shoulders, which I think would be a major enhancement relative to what we have there today. And additionally, providing for a 15-foot easement on our frontage for a future multimodal path. Given that the Breakwater Trail will run down the western side of the property and connect to the rest of the trail network system in that area, not sure if that makes sense or not makes sense, but that's something that will be figured out later. In terms of regional projects, there's quite a few that this project would be likely contributing to. They start basically almost at Route 1 where Dartmouth Drive and Kings Highway meet. It's a triangle intersection, and there would be a contribution to a signal and that intersection, the intersection improvements there. Working your way east, Clay Road, there would be a contribution to a signal and an intersection improvement there. Further east at the intersection with the high school, Senators is already working on the design development of the improvements to the intersection there, adding through lanes and turn lanes. So that will be driven by senators, so it's ahead of this project. There may be a contribution from this project to that project to kind of reimburse them for what they fronted. But that'll be that's an ongoing project. And then coming towards the Schofield entrance, at the curve that is there in Gills Neck Road, kind of at the corner of Senators, Senators is starting within the next 30 days a construction project which will soften that curve a bit and enhance the safety there. So there's two ongoing projects, which are the one in front of the high school at that intersection and the Senators curve, or the Gills Neck curve, and then the others will be contributions to the regional process there.
Can you touch briefly about subjects of impacts, financial impacts or benefits, impacts on schools, that sort of thing?
Sure. In terms of economic impact, we did show that in tab 12 of the book, and the dealt out stuff is also highlighted in tab 9, just to orient you. But in terms of economic impact, basically we estimated, first looking at transfer tax, the big one, because we expect this community to be lot sales and then someone building on that lot with a custom home, there's kind of two events. There's the transfer tax at the lot sale and then a transfer tax on the actual construction cost when they go to build. We estimate that to be about $1.5 million in incremental revenue to the county. That's based on conservative cost estimates and historicals from neighboring projects. In addition, there are construction-related revenues, which would be impact fees, inspection fees, review fees, the like. We estimate these to be $1.3 million, so the total incremental revenue to the county would be about $2.8 million. This doesn't include some of the recurring benefits, so the increased real estate tax base, the ongoing sales or turnover of houses that may be built and sold in the community over time, and then also the sewer fees. Details of that analysis are in the project booklet.
Impact on schools?
Yeah, so given our company and our affiliates' development of that corridor, we do have a good bit of insight into the homeowners in that area, as well as just, I think, generally we all have a good feel for demographic of that area, and we see a larger percentage of the active adult and the less likely to have school-age children. So based on history of what we know in neighboring communities, we don't see a meaningful impact or significant impact on schools.
What about impact on neighboring property values?
Sure. So lots in this community we expect to be about $300,000 to $600,000, depending on where they are located in there. And that's really a function of how special we try to design this community, and with water features, the amenities that are there, and just the natural beauty and location of, you know, the canvas that we have to paint on. When you add in the cost of a custom home, you know, similar to what's in Wolf Point, Wolf Run, and Hawk's Eye, we'd expect homes to be anywhere from $800 to over, $1.2 million, very commensurate, on par with or higher than those neighboring communities.
All right, that's all I have, Doug. Thanks. Gentlemen, that's all we have other than winding up. This property is in level one, as Doug pointed out. It is consistent with our comprehensive plan, our plan's future land use map. And as has been demonstrated, it's consistent with the character and trend of development in the Gills Neck area. I think it's clear that the cluster design is a better layout with more open space and a significant amenity package than what was planned to be annexed to Lewis. What's before you is a far cry from the annexation project. There is at least 50% less density, far less traffic impact as a result, far more open space, what's clearly a superior design, and it is designed in keeping with what's developed on Gills Neck Road over the past 20 years. We'd be glad to field any questions you have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Byer, let's talk a little bit about the road improvements and the contributions to intersections and that sort of thing, because I know that in many situations it's a matter of houses being built before road improvements are made and the problems that creates in that process. So what's the time frame, for example, the improvements to the intersection there by the high school.
Mr. Johnson, the answer for me is I'm damned if I know, but I'll call on Doug. And if Mark, if you want to come forward and weigh in, please do. Doug, you want to
have that? I'll let you go, Mark. I'm sure. Hi, I'm Mark Cote. I'm with DelDOT. I'm the assistant director in charge of development coordination. Mr. Molly actually very accurately described the off-site improvements, so I want to commend him for that. The improvements at the high school intersection are, as I said, going to be designed and built by the developers of Senators. So they will be making a contribution, but they're not responsible for making the improvements. But the construction is going to happen very soon, so actually will probably be completed before maybe any or just a few of the units are being built. So in that particular intersection, improvement will be done before homes are actually built.
So you're in, so it's in the DelDOT's budget to be built in the year 2015?
No, it is not DelDOT's budget.
As they'll
quickly point out, all those improvements are borne by the developer. DelDOT is not paying for any of that. It's the developer's responsibility.
And DelDOT's role is to supervise the construction of those roads and the turn lanes? And
yes, we reviewed all the traffic analysis to show what's required and then review and approve the design. And then the developer hires the contractor to build those improvements, and we do the inspection.
So it's on Senators to make these improvements with contributions from this project or just Senators?
Correct. Right now, Senators is fully on the hook, but as they said, it's likely that they will make a contribution towards Senator to reimburse them for all their costs, total costs.
And what about the road improvements in front of the development? When you talk about the turn lanes into the development?
Yes. Originally, with this as a much larger development, we had improvements all along Gills Neck Road, 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders, from the kind of western edge of the property all the way around the curve going towards the railroad crossing. Now this is dramatically scaled back, so we'll probably be concentrating the frontage improvements really between the two entrances, but we have not determined improvements further to the east going towards the railroad crossing. We still, that hasn't been designed yet. We've got to look at available right-of-way and other conflicts.
So then the road improvements are envisioned from this project towards the high school, but not towards the canal and leading up ultimately to the bridge intersection.
Yeah, going towards the canal has not been determined yet.
If I could elaborate on that, Mr. Johnson, I believe DelDOT is requiring of this developer a donation of a 15-foot multimodal easement on the what would be the west side of Gills Neck Road across the perimeter of its property. But there is significant property on Gills Neck Road that is not owned by this developer. If I had to guess, I would say more than half of the property, the right-of-way or the roadway shoulder on the west side is owned by 8 or 9 other property owners.
Right.
So all this developer can do is commit right-of-way and has agreed to do that.
So just on those two little pieces of property that front Gills Neck Road is where the 15-foot easement is being provided?
No, that's the...
Well, where they own land.
Right. Yes. So it's part of our sidewalks of nowhere.
Well, we have a significant investment in the trail.
If I can point, gentlemen, it would be here and here. Those areas.
Okay.
But the balance is owned by 8 or 9 other owners. Did that answer your question, Mr. Johnson?
It is. I mean, obviously the concern that I have, and I'm sure of many folks here in the audience, is this is a potential impact of dumping a few hundred more cars on the road into. An area that is in great need of improvement. And I understand that the curve there is going to be smoothed out perhaps, won't be such a sharp curve as well as the improvements to the intersection there at the high school.
And that construction should start later this year on the softening of the curve.
On the softening of the curve. But what about the intersection? Is there a time frame for when that's going to start?
Again, I'm not the engineer.
So obviously there's a lot of coordination between school traffic, DRBA, summer, everything, and all of DLDOT's requirements. So as of now, it's scheduled to start summer of 2015.
Summer of 2015.
Yeah, and it's basically because the design is being finalized and it's been being worked on for 2 years. That's how many moving parts there are in trying to keep traffic flowing there throughout the year, having the least amount of impact on what's going on, while also making the improvements that we need, which are pretty complex and involved. So not wanting to start in the season when we are not allowed to, summertime is when we've been directed to do that, and 2015 is when that's scheduled.
So when the school's not in session, that's what you're hoping to do. Okay. Now, in terms of changing things up a little bit, with this size development, is there any plans or intentions to have a school bus stop?
I knew you would ask that question, Mr. Johnson. If you look in the draft findings of fact, there's specific language that the developer will consult with the school district and, as necessary, locate a school bus stop.
And the entrance that's being proposed, I know there's concern that it lines up with another subdivision. Is that not part of the standard operating procedure for DLDOT to have entrances to line up?
I'll let Mr. Cote speak to that. I'm not DLDOT. Thank
you. Mr. Cote, you may wish to sit a little closer.
Yeah. Yeah, again, Mark Cote from DLDOT. Yes, our standard procedure is to line up entrances opposite each other. Each potential development is then, because it's lined up, able to take advantage of turn lanes and things like that. So it localizes improvements to one particular area. So, yes, we like to line up entrances.
Thank you. Mr. Byer, you made reference to potential interconnectivity to the property. I guess that's sort of northwest.
Yes, sir.
And that's property that's currently owned by the developer as well?
That's correct.
Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, we get these developments come in, and the buzzword used to be interconnectivity, and then it became exclusivity. You didn't want your neighbors traipsing through your property. So,
well, if you've visited the site recently, this whole area is under cultivation. Mm-hmm. It will remain under cultivation until the owner decides if and when and how to develop the property. The purpose of the 50-foot right-of-way, obviously, is to connect to Monroe Avenue extended. That's to be available for emergency vehicles until that tiny Monroe Avenue extended is widened and enlarged, if and when the property to the northwest develops. Okay. It's owned by this developer.
And what about interconnectivity with the property that would be to the northeast? I see that you have a traffic loop there. Is that potentially where you might consider a connectivity with the adjoining property as well?
That's already designed. Doug, do you want to point that out, please?
Yeah, the other location besides the Monroe one is at the end of this cul-de-sac leading to this parcel and this area over here. That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, at this point, I don't have any further questions.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Burton. I have just one, and that why are there two entrances? It seems to be that the bike path is dominantly on the one. Why confuse it with cars?
Again, I'll defer to the engineer and the experts. Doug, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I would have to double check the ADT flows that we had coming out of there.
We thought it'd give a little bit of redundancy, number one. It's a valid point, potentially, with the pedestrian stuff. But I'd have to double-check the traffic flow quantities and what the requirements are there. And in addition to that, it is a little bit closer to that curve, you know, so we thought having another means for the 166 to not be bottlenecked at the one particular location.
And the curve that you are that everybody's talking about softening is not this curve, it's the one that's by Senators.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, and addressing this curve is not in anybody's conversation?
At this time, correct.
Okay. And let's just talk about Monroe Avenue again. Is that's a city road? I'm unfamiliar with the extending of Monroe.
I'll let Doug handle that, but yes, it is, and that's within city limits.
Yeah, just somewhat a little bit better. Just get you the whole. This is Freeman leading to the ferry, going down that way, and Monroe Avenue that takes you right into town is right across here, and hence Monroe Avenue Extended, which is or by driveway, maybe for lack of a better purpose.
Okay, so it's not a.
It's a street. It's a street. I mean, but it's certainly not of the caliber of, you know, Freeman or even Monroe or one of the typical streets in the city. But that's where the lot is anticipated running now. You know, Monroe Avenue runs along that, right along White's Pond, and then we were anticipating a connection right in here.
Okay. And the reason that is not there, is there a reason it's not? It's not in the city, or not?
Reason Monroe
reason,
Avenue extended?
Reason it is not connected.
There are a handful of houses and so forth over here, and I think that road is basically servicing those homes. And then this is all agricultural fields, and no reason to bring the road further into the current property.
Mr. Burton, if you remember Gibbs Paint Store.
I do.
That may be the fourth user on Monroe Avenue extended. There are three cottages and the former Gibbs Paint Store.
And then one other thing, there's no drainage to White's Pond at all with this development?
No, there is potentially drainage to White's Pond, absolutely. These stormwater ponds here will most likely collect, and then they will discharge into White's Pond, which is a tidal pond, and then discharge through the ditch and then over to the canal is the ultimate discharge point.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one at this point. I'm interested in hearing what the public has to say. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Cote for taking out his time to attend not only this meeting, but the meeting prior to this earlier in the month. My question is, how about a date or timeline for the completion of the proposed amenities?
Doug, you want to handle that?
Sure. I think something around the time frame of 2 years from the first building permit would be reasonable. The one thing that we would, I think, trying to think ahead is not sure exactly of the things that we may run into in dealing with a barn that's 80 plus years old. So I would at that the 2 year time frame from the first building permit is totally reasonable and something we would expect. We just would want the forethought of perhaps some flexibility in that given the complexity of dealing with what we're dealing with.
Do you think, given your preparation for this, that you would have a contingency plan should you run into something like powder post beetles or something?
Absolutely.
What you're representing in front of the commission tonight cannot be built?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's going to be a community facility there.
And
period.
You would specify square footages and things of that nature?
Sure. We can do that as part of the final plan or, you know, at whatever time it may be needed. We'd probably want to do – that's a much larger facility than we would build and probably would be needed. For example, Senators has 229 homes, and that facility is about 4,400 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
So something pro rata on that basis with 166 we'd absolutely commit to. But just not knowing what we're dealing with on this existing facility – creates a little bit of uncertainty.
If you look at the photograph in the booklet somewhere, this is an old, I guess it's a Dutch type barn.
Mm-hmm.
The owner has already redone the roof and the almost a flying buttress, the roof supports in the interior, and there's a parquet floor on the second floor. So it's underway. But it may take some time to reconfigure an 80-year-old barn.
Understood. I just thought I would mention that. You've heard, which it wasn't a part of this presentation, but there was fatigue by the commission expressed, and I think we want to be a little more exacting going forward with some of these demands.
I think it's well tied to the issuance of building permits. Nothing gets a builder's attention or developer's attention more quickly than the inability to draw building permits.
Thank you, sir. That's all I have for now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Mr. Ross?
Just two questions. The nearest DART bus stop, did I miss that? Or nearest DART, is there one plan for the facility, or where's the nearest one?
Gosh, I'd throw Mark Cote under the bus, as it were, but he doesn't work for DART. I don't know the answer to that question.
I'm sorry, I don't know either.
Well, you know, it's really a site plan related question as well as my next question, but maybe if you get that far, we can have a discussion with DelDOT regarding how you're going to tie the development into the transit system.
There is one other point that may be relevant to that question.
On Freeman Highway, the city of Lewis is building a library not too far from where the trail will come out
on Freeman Highway. So my guess is that there may be some public access there.
Well, you might be able to, you know, tie it in with your school bus stop as well when you do that, or discuss that anyway. And then I didn't notice anything in the book, but it's a big book, about post office. Do you plan on having boxes on every house, or are you going to have discussions with the post office on perhaps having a post office island to make it easier for the carriers, or how are you going to handle that?
Yeah, we'd certainly consult with the postmaster and see what they want to do. If we look at the other communities in the area, they all have individual mailboxes, but we can certainly work with the postmaster.
Certainly nothing in code, so I'm not trying to push you in a direction, but perhaps a conversation with the post office would be warranted sooner than later.
Absolutely.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Mr. Lank?
No questions.
All right. Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Counselor?
No questions.
All right, then. We thank you. If you'll take a seat nearby.
Thank you.
And then we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2014-2 Schofield LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision number 2014-2? All right, sir. Yes, sir, you're first. Get up, if you would come up and give us your name, you may have the floor.
I'm Ronald Smith, and I own property on Gills Neck Road adjacent to this development. Okay. First off, I'd like to say I'm not in opposition to it.
Okay.
I'm just neutral. I mean, you didn't give that kind of thing, but
you know, we should probably have a neutral clash, you know, because this happens fairly often. Someone will get up and say, "I'm not sure I'm for or against," or an uncertain maybe.
I just
go ahead.
I had some questions that maybe can be answered tonight or at some point later. One, it said in a letter, I guess, to Mr. Lank from, I assume, DelDOT. It said this: the developer shall improve Gills Neck Road from the entrance of the Hawk's Eye Breakwater subdivision. That's the entrance to the west. From there, they're going to improve the road with two 11-foot travel lanes and two 5-foot shoulders all the way to the Lewis city limits, which is down by the Smith house. So to my knowledge, the right of way, the road that the state owns now is 30 feet, and this makes this 211-foot and 2 5-foot shoulders 32 feet. So I was wondering how this is going to affect the property owners that are not part of this subdivision. Another thing, I had a good example of this. The traffic in eastern Sussex, particularly between Lewis and Rehoboth, is horrendous. And adding more stoplights does not make the traffic any better. It took me 25 minutes today to go from Five Points down to Walmart, which is a distance of 2 to 3 miles. And there's stoplights probably every quarter mile or more. And what is being proposed is there are going to be two more stoplights between the high school and Route 1, beside the one that's there now. The buffers, whatever, I mean, it's going to change, but the traffic on Gills Neck Road is pretty serious. There's a lot of bikes, and a lot of them don't use the path down through the Senators and go out to the high school. They come out through Hawk's Eye, turn right, because they want to go downtown Lewis, and they don't want to ride an extra mile or two if they don't have to. That's really all I have right now. Like I say, from what I heard tonight, it seems like to be, given what's already there, I guess, an appropriate subdivision, but there's serious traffic problems, and they're going to have to be addressed sometime, because the traffic or infrastructure in this county is, on the east, particularly eastern side of the county, is woefully inadequate. And I don't know how many of you travel Route 9 between here and Route 1 or Lewis, but it's pretty slow a lot of times, too. Thank you.
Arthur, thank you. Mr. Cote or Mr. Warner, you want to address the right-of-way question? It doesn't matter to me, somebody, one of you guys. The question was that it sounds like the improvements add up to a 32-foot stretch, and the gentleman is under the impression that there's only a 30-foot easement. How are we going to do that?
Well, the owners of this particular property will be dedicating additional right-of-way to Del Dot for road improvements on their property. Maybe Mark can comment to the people that are adjacent to this property and whether they try to claim that land or what have you. I can't comment to that, but we will be providing the adequate right-of-way dedication, actual property, to Del Dot for the improvements on our property.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Again, Mark Cote. For right-of-way improvements that are required by the developers, if the right-of-way does not exist, so in this case, if the 30-foot is correct, which I believe it is, and there's, say, 32-foot of pavement, then additional right-of-way would need to be acquired from the property owners at, you know, full compensation as a requirement for the developer in order to build the improvements. So if the right-of-way does not exist, the developer is required to acquire that right-of-way.
Okay. So the additional 2 feet will be is required to be acquired by the developer from the existing property owners?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, who's next? All the way in the back. Yes, sir. No, you're right. You're right. Yep. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for adding a neutral zone. I'm therefore I can present my question. Thank you.
Okay, but you got to print your name first.
My name is Larry Edwards, and I am a resident of Bay Breeze Estates, which is adjacent to the proposed Schofield development. Thank you. I am impressed with the use of reviewing agencies in doing the studies and preparations for this plan. I do have one question, though. On page 255 of the application, it states that the area was archaeologically clean. Yet there was only the statement, there was no background as to how this conclusion was reached, and I simply would like to know what third parties were involved, and if, for example, was this process monitored or approved by the State Historical Preservation Society, as an example?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, gentlemen. Who decided that there were who decided there wasn't any archaeological impact here?
Sure.
Or did you just walk around and didn't see any arrowheads?
See anything? So we thought we were good.
Must be good.
One of the things we typically consult, and I think is generally accepted practice, is the 1868 Beers Atlas, and that is in tab 3 of your project booklet, which shows that there were no relevant sites in or near this property. Also, during the PLUS process, SHPO does have the ability to comment and did comment, and there were no sites identified during that as well.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Nancy Smith, and I'm with Ron Smith, and we live on that parcel on Hills Neck Road. The only thing, I hope you had a question about the two entrances. I'm really happy there are two entrances, because the one entrance, the main entrance, is really on a blind curve, and it's a very dangerous curve. So with the two, it gives people alternates, and the one to the west is very open, and at least you can traffic will be able to see.
Okay, thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am. In the purple.
Mr. Chairman, are we still doing opposition, or are we still doing neutral?
Well, we're sort of we've given the folks who are in favor an opportunity, and I think they're done. So we're sort of taking whoever comes next. You don't necessarily have to be opposed. You can be neutral. So you may have the floor. Just give us your name.
Good evening. I'm Dorothy Greet. I'm a resident of Lewis. I have a question about the designation of Gills Neck as a scenic byway, which in my understanding means that it remains as a scenic byway without alteration.
Okay.
I'm wondering how that is being addressed in all the discussion of adjustments for the width of the highway.
Okay.
I don't know who can answer that question.
Oh, I bet we'll find somebody.
Okay. I'll attempt to address that. I'm not a byways expert, but I do know that as the projects come through for the byway designation, then there's certain steps to for that project to be like fully realized,
right.
One of which is a management plan, which then determines what you can and cannot do along the byway. So a byway is not, you can't do anything. That is definitely not the case. There's a management plan that may govern open space, materials, all those kinds of things. So there's a management plan that would determine what you can and cannot do. I'm not sure whether that management plan is in place for this byway, but I don't think so.
Okay.
But I'm certainly open to, if anyone knows better.
Okay, very good. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am. In the pink. Salmon, whatever color that is. You in the sweater.
I'm Gail Van Gilder, and I am the chair of the Lewis Scenic Byway. So I thought it would be a
here
good
time. Here we go. Excellent. Excellent.
To answer
welcome.
That question.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you. And Mark is correct. You know, we've certainly worked together a lot over the years. And the purpose of the scenic byway is to try to retain as much of the existing roadway as we can as development takes place. But we do recognize that development will happen and that changes to the roadway may have to be done. But what we try to do is to work with the DelDOT and work with the developer on what we call context-sensitive design. In other words, DelDOT actually has a context-sensitive design manual that they've put together to be used on, can be used on scenic byways. And actually, Federal Highways also has a flexibility in highway design guideline manual that could be used as well. So what we try to do is the best that we can to make the changes that need to be made to ensure safety, but at the same time, scale things back often and to try to maintain as much of the road that deemed it, you know, the characteristics of the road that deemed it to be scenic in the first place. And on Gill's Neck Road, obviously the two-lane winding road going through the countryside there, which is still very much the way it was for many years, would be what people would want to retain as much as they can. Now, we have not yet had an opportunity to go over this, you know, with DLDOT in detail and what things, you know, can be done to accommodate those changes and at the same time maintain the byway intrinsic qualities. So we will be doing that, going through this process, and we would like to work with you, with the developer, and with DLDOT on that. I mean, we will be meeting with DLDOT actually next week. We do have a meeting already set up to go over some of this. And that's what we will be doing. So, but I think it's important to note that being on a byway does actually raise, I would say, property values, and that the developers can use the fact that it is on a scenic byway to their advantage in marketing these home sites, and they should be aware of that. And we are interested in forming a partnership and working with the developer to do the best that we can to preserve what we have. Obviously, that's why people come to Lewis, because it is a special place. And the Scenic Byway Program gives us an opportunity to do that, and all working together to do the best that we can. So if you have any questions, I did bring the state byway manual with me. I have a map of the byway that I can give you and the state byway brochure when Lewis is in there. There are, by the way, 6 scenic byways in the state, and Lewis is one of them because of its very historic and scenic, natural, cultural, recreational, and archaeological intrinsic qualities, all of which it has. So that's what we're doing. So I hope that helps. Who should I give this to?
Our council.
Thank you.
All right, we thank you. Yes, sir, in the maroon shirt.
I thought you were colorblind.
No, when you come here, you have to be aware of what you're wearing, though. You do have to look to see what you have on, because that's the only way I have to identify you. Go ahead.
My name is Dave Greer Lewis.
Uh-huh.
I've been listening to the conversation. It seems to me that taking the bends out of the Old Neck Road will do nothing but speed up traffic. And the roundabout that was suggested on King's Highway at the Dartmouth intersection would slow it down. And I don't think either one of those solutions is a solution. It seems to me that when you have a certain number of cars going down Gill's Neck Road, there's nothing you can do other than if there is a bottleneck at the end of Gill's Neck Road. The only way to solve that situation is produce another exit from the Gill's Neck Road community. There is no other exit. It's the same thing at the Dartmouth intersection. It's a bottleneck. It's a failed intersection. Now, adding more houses is not going to help. I don't know any solution that is going to help that. DLDOT suggested at one point that they would make King's Highway 4 lanes. I don't see that that's a solution either. There is no solution to the problem other than cut down the number of cars.
Okay, thank you. Okay, yes, ma'am, in the back, and then Mr. Becker.
Is Kathy Pergola. Mm-hmm. I live on Lewis on Gill's Neck Road, and my mother had property there for over 40 years. And we built a home. We had to apply for a variance to build a home there. And at the time of the variance, Hazel Smith objected to us dividing our property because she couldn't drive her tractor down Gill's Neck Road because she didn't want to deal with another driveway. And I just wanted to bring that up to y'all, that there was a time when she did not want all this development, that the property that she bought the property for conservation and not for development. And I think in her heart, she still feels that way. One of the other things I wanted to address was the bend in the road. I feel like that will speed traffic up. It's very, very dangerous walking down that road. We walk that road. We ride our bikes down that road. We live on that road. And people that don't come here often are not concerned with pedestrian traffic. And our house is close to the road. It's about 40 foot off the road. So I'm thinking that if they do the property, if they get the property that they need for the shoulders and things, our house will be right at the road. And we're going to retire here, and we're going to keep moving because we're older. And, you know, I see a lot of people, and that's one of my concerns. And the other concern I have is my property backs up to the development, and I would really like to see the buffer be a little larger for a lot of reasons. Okay. So that's it.
All right. Thanks. Thank you. Mayor.
Good evening. I'm Ted Becker, the mayor of Lewis, and I'm here tonight just to speak a little bit about Schofield. Schofield, as you all know, was a 607 home development that was considered by Lewis back in 2007. And that project stalled after 54 hearings and a recommendation that we go proceed with annexation. Due to the recession, it stalled. However, the city always anticipated that the project would come back forth as the recession abated and the economic conditions improved. So in 2013, there was renewed discussion between the developers and the city about moving forward with a reduced project of 401 homes. And we were beginning some discussions on that. However, the proposal before you tonight fractures those more recent plans into two developments, with each being developed to different standards and at different times. However, this division into two projects was achieved without major modification to the concept shared with the city last year. The two projects will share extensive common boundary, which will divide them when they are both fully developed. As a result of this division, the county portion will be considered here, that's being considered here, will be served by only two entrances, which are approximately 1,500 feet apart. Both are only accessed by Gills Neck Road, an already heavily traveled road. This could result in as many as 300 additional cars or vehicles being added to that road on a daily basis. Both of the earlier proposals provided for four access points, which include an entrance off of Freeman Highway, as you've heard earlier tonight, and through an extension of Monroe Avenue. The extension of Monroe Avenue was considered as critical, as it provided direct access for EMS, fire, and police responders, as well as a more direct route to the hospital, with all of which are located in the central part of Lewis. This access is still viewed as critical by the city, and yet the proposal you are considering tonight does not provide for the development of this access, which would come across the portion of the entire parcel that is slated for development at some future time. This would mean the residents of the current proposed development would experience delayed responses to any emergencies, as responders would need to take considerably longer routes and perhaps a slower route to get to their emergency. The city remains convinced that this entire parcel, if developed, should become part of Lewis. However, if any development of the lands outside of the city is to occur, we feel that the maximum connectivity with Lewis should be pursued. We would like to see Monroe Avenue extended immediately.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Warner or someone, I'm a little confused. I thought I heard someone say that access would be there for emergency vehicles and such. Is that
that's
am I mistaken?
That's Mr. Warner's design.
Because that Mr. Becker makes an excellent point. I mean,
that's exactly why it's there. Which plot?
But
allocated on this design for potential connection to this. That actual connection has not been designed and is not part of this application. Can it be? That's up for discussion.
Well, okay.
It is not
that's...
currently designed because this parcel is not part of this application. Hmm. We're providing provision here and at the cul-de-sac for future connectivity.
Is it a practical possibility to do that? I mean, are there property ownership issues or anything? I mean, could that be done?
The 50-foot way could be open to what would be the southern terminus of Monroe Avenue Extended.
Okay, thank you. All right, anyone else? Okay, going once, twice. Anyone on the commission have any questions?
I have a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I appreciate the applicant's thoroughness and the information that was provided to us and the voluminous materials. And unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to use as many stickers as I would have in the past had Mr. Byard been here. But good job.
All right, then. Anyone else? Okay, before we close the public hearing, first I want to thank you all for your patience and for being so well-behaved this evening. When we close the public hearing, I imagine that many of you are going to want to leave, or you're welcome to stay for the rest of the evening if you like. But I'm going to ask you when we close the public hearing, if you are leaving, if you would do so quickly and quietly, because we do have a little more business to transact. Okay? And with that, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to be with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.